Chapter 5. Mr. Lismore's Position. In traversing the hall and climbing the stairs of Mary Callender's house, look where he might, Ernest noticed proof of taste. In fact, her house displayed the kind of good taste that cannot be purchased. Wealth was everywhere, but was subtle in showing its true value. Conducted by her butler to the landing on the first floor, he found a maid at the door of the boudoir waiting to announce him. Mrs. Callender advanced to welcome her guest in a simple evening dress perfectly suited to her age. All that had looked worn and faded in her fine face by day was now softly hidden by the shaded lamps. Objects of beauty were all around her. They radiated with quiet brightness from their background of conservative color. Appearance can make the strongest of impressions. For the moment, the scene produced a positive impression on Ernest, in spite of the terrible angst which consumed him. Mrs. Callender, in his office, was a woman who had been outside her natural area of ease. Thus, Mrs. Callender, in her own home, was a woman who had risen to a new place in his estimation. She welcomed Mr. Lismore in a friendly and pleasant manner. "I am afraid you don't thank me for forcing you to keep your engagement," she said. "Indeed I do thank you," he replied. "Your beautiful house and your thoughtful welcome have persuaded me to forget my troubles for a while." The smile passed from her face. "Then what I heard is true," she said gravely. "Only too true." She led him to a seat beside her. She waited until her maid had brought in the tea before speaking again. "Have you read my letter in the same friendly spirit in which I wrote it?" she asked when they were alone again. "I have read your letter gratefully, but you don't know yet what I have to say. Let us understand each other before we make any objections either way. Will you tell me what your present position is, at its worst? I will speak plainly when my turn comes, if you will honor me with your confidence. But not if it upsets you," she added, observing him closely. He was embarrassed by his hesitation, and he made an attempt to change it. He laid the whole truth before her without reserve. "Do you thoroughly understand me?" he asked when he was finished with his explanation. She summed up his situation in her own words. "If your late ship returns safely within a month from today, you can borrow the money you want without difficulty. If the ship is lost, you have no alternative. When the end of the month comes, you will have to accept a loan from me or suspend payment. Is that the hard truth?"
"It is."
"And the sum you require is £20,000?
"Yes."
"I have 20 times as much money as that, Mr. Lismore, at my sole disposal, on one condition."
"The condition hinted to in your letter?"
"Yes."
"Does the fulfillment of the condition depend in some way on any decision of mine?"
"It depends entirely on you." That answer silenced him. With a composed manner and a steady hand, she poured herself a cup of tea. "I hide it from you," she said, "but I lack confidence. Here," she pointed to the cup, "is the friend of women, rich or poor, when they are in trouble. What I have now to say obliges me to speak in praise of myself. I don't like it. Let me say this as quickly as I can. My husband was very loving toward me. He had the most absolute confidence in my sensitivity and in my sense of duty to him and to myself. His last words before he died were words that thanked me for making his life happy. As soon as I had recovered a little from my husband's death, his lawyer produced a copy of his will. He said there were two special passages in it. My husband had stated a wish that I should read them. Of course, I obeyed." She still controlled her anxiety, but she now was unable to hide it. Ernest made an attempt to spare her. "Does this passage concern me?" he asked.
"Yes. Before I tell you why, I want to know what you would do in a certain case which I am not ready to even suppose. I have heard of men unable to pay their debts. They began businesses again and succeeded, and over time paid their creditors.
And you want to know if there is any chance of me following their example? He asked. Have you also heard of men who have made that second effort and have failed again? Who have doubled the debts they owed to their partners in business who trusted them? I knew one of those men myself. He killed himself. She laid her hand for a moment on his. I understand you, she said. If insolvency comes... If insolvency comes, he cut in to add, a man without money and without credit can make but one last attempt to make changes. Don't speak of it now. She looked at him with horror. I didn't mean that, she said. Shall we go back to what you read in the will? He suggested. Yes, if you will give me a minute to compose myself.